Good morning. It is time to get up with an NFL draft unlike any other. One GM wants three extra picks apiece. Are huge changes in store? We've got the latest. Plus, the new coach in Washington sends a clear signal of which player his team will take it to and which player it won't. You'll hear it straight from Ron Rivera. And then Mark Teixeira says he would go along with baseball's bubble plan on one condition. You'll hear what it is and whether the whole season depends on it as we get up with you starting right now. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol, and I checked. It is indeed Wednesday, and we are delighted you have chosen to get up with us today. Thrilled to have you, and first and foremost to all of you who may be watching who are medical professionals or first responders. Our show is for you, and we thank you for what you're doing from the bottom of our hearts. And we are busy with a lot of sports news today. Let's get up and go and tell you about all of it. It starts with South Korea's baseball league. They're targeting an early May start to their regular season. The KBO has been a test case for American sports leagues. They could begin playing exhibition games as early as April 21st. The league was originally scheduled to start their regular season on March 28th, so let's chalk that up as good news. Elsewhere, the Lakers plan to ask select members of their senior-level personnel to voluntarily defer 20% of their salaries. The team hopes to avoid having lower-income employees take a pay cut due to the coronavirus pandemic. Dayton star Obi Toppin was named the winner of the 2020 Wooden Award yesterday. He's a projected lottery pick. He also won both the Naismith and the Associated Press National Player of the Year Awards last week. Hockey news. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman said yesterday it might not be possible for the league to complete its regular season, but they are still looking into playing into late summer. Most teams have about 11 to 14, somewhere in that midst, regular season games left on their schedule. And the NFL confirmed earlier this week the 2020 draft will be entirely virtual with all team personnel working from their homes. Yesterday, Adam Schefter here on Get Up explained how that might impact the way the teams do business during the draft.
Well, I think what it may impact, Greeny, is the amount of trading you see, because if you're leaving the same amount of time on the clock, there is less time for teams to communicate with each other and turn in the picks. And therefore, you may see less trading than in other years. Usually, we see teams jumping up and all around the draft board. And maybe we'll see it again. But I know there are people that are skeptical that that can happen under these circumstances because of the difficulties we're presented with here.
That was Schefter yesterday. This is Dan Graziano today. Dan, what are you hearing from teams regarding the challenges that they're anticipating conducting this draft this way?
Greeny, it's a lot of fear of the unknown. I mean, these are GMs and executives. They're going to have to conduct the draft from their own homes and talk to their own people remotely, either on, you know, Zoom or FaceTime or something like that. And they've never done it before like this. They usually, they have their brain trust all in the same room, and a trade call comes in and they can just look around the room and say, who likes this? Who doesn't? You can read people's faces. So talking to executives, there's some concern about the ability to be nimble in that short window. And then one person said to me, you know, would you want a franchise or life-altering decision to rest on the quality of your home internet connection? And I had to shake my head and say, no, I obviously would not, because those can be unreliable. My understanding is the league plans to do some pre-draft testing to have teams kind of get online and make sure things are working smoothly before the draft. But I don't think there's going to be any concession made if some weird technical glitch happens during the draft that messes somebody up. And I think there are some GMs and some executives that are concerned about that.
We're hearing about people making or throwing out ideas. Kevin Colbert suggested that every team should get three additional picks because they may be more likely to make mistakes under these circumstances. The possibility of maybe extending the window, giving teams more times routine picks for some of the reasons that you're talking about. Any chance anything like that happens?
There has been some discussion in the early stages about lengthening the window in terms of the amount of time you have to make a pick. I don't know if they've settled one way or another on that. I don't think there's any consideration to giving extra picks. Colbert's idea is an interesting one, but I have not heard that under serious consideration. But early in the process, when they started talking about this, the possibility of extending the window of time you had to make a pick was raised, and I guess it's possible they could do that, although at this point they have not.
All right, so it's 2 weeks. Weeks from tomorrow, we'll see all of that. Meanwhile, let's get to the actual meat and potatoes of this draft. The Cincinnati Bengals have been on the clock for a very long time now, and I continue to read stories and hear thoughts that the Dolphins have not given up on the notion of going all the way up to number one and trying to draft Joe Burrow. Once and for all, what are you hearing about that?
I am told that the Dolphins would like to go up and trade for that number one pick and take Joe Burrow, who they see as the number one quarterback in this draft. But I'm also told that at this point, the Bengals have given no indication that they're willing to move out of that pick, that they intend to sit there at number one and take Joe Burrow. I think you're going to continue to hear this over the next 15 days. It's entirely possible that the Dolphins continue to, you know, improve an offer and get to the point where they entice the Bengals. But to this point, that has not happened, and the Miami Dolphins are sitting there with three first-round picks, one of which is the number five overall pick, and they feel like if they sit at five, or even if they trade up with the Lions to three, they can get a quarterback that they like. But it doesn't look, at this point, as if they're going to be able to move all the way up to one and get Joe Burrow.
Right. There's a big difference between getting a quarterback that you like and getting the quarterback that you want. So for more on that, Dan, stay with me. Let me get Mel Kiper Jr. into the conversation. We are 2 weeks away from Christmas, and he's Santa Claus, if you know what I'm saying. So let me ask you the question this way, Mel, because over all of these decades, you have studied the value of these picks. You understand the way these charts work and everything else. If you're the decision maker in Cincinnati and the Dolphins call you and say, I have three picks in the first round this year, you can have them all, and I'll take Joe Burrow. Do you do it?
Depends upon this, Greeny. If Joe Burrow is head and shoulders above any other quarterback, be it Tua, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, because they're the guys who would be in play at five if you made that deal, then you take the quarterback that has that big gap, that he's your guy, he's your franchise guy in a division with Josh Allen at Buffalo, Sam Darnold with the Jets, and we'll see what New England does, obviously, moving forward after Brady's gone, and he's gone now to Tampa, so we'll see what happens with them. But if you're Cincinnati, you take Burrow. You don't even think about it. Because moving down and getting your picks, Greeny, I went back to 1984. Boomer Esiason went in the second round to the Bengals. The Bengals had three first-round picks that year, none of which amounted to much. Ricky Hundley, linebacker, top 10 pick, disappointment. Pete Koch, defensive end, disappointment. And then Brian Bledos, offensive tackle. So without Boomer Esiason in the second round, they don't get to a Super Bowl. And he did it without the benefit of those draft picks. So I think you look at draft picks mean nothing if you don't have that big-time quarterback. And if they think Burrow's the guy and there's a gap, you don't think of it. If it's close, then you would think about definitely moving down, and because knowing at five you get Tua or Herbert or Love, whoever you deem the second-best quarterback.
All right, Mel, stay with me. I want to come back to you on this, but I've got a couple of other people with me I want to check in with here. Rex and Neek are with me so far this morning, and D. Wood will be along as well. Rex Ryan, let me start with this. One of the things we think we like about Burrow is his readiness. He's ready to play immediately. But under these extraordinary circumstances where teams will have no off-season program to speak of, and it may be a truncated training camp by the time we get there, do you think it is realistic that even a quarterback as relatively experienced as Burrow is will be ready to start week one?
Yeah, I think he will be. I mean, look, it's football at the end of the day, and you're going to take this young man with the very first pick. So as a staff, you're going to do what he does best. You know, a lot of empty sets, all those type of things. That's why I think that this is a slam dunk, no brainer. He comes in day one, he's going to be the starter. And by the way, if they trade him, they're absolutely out of their mind. You know, they trade that pick.
I hear you on that completely. Again, as far as his being the starter, this plays into a lot of things, including the possibility, Dominique Foxworth, of the Bengals entertaining a trade of Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is a guy that I'm sure a lot of teams around the league, i.e. maybe one in Foxborough, could be interested in if the Bengals were willing to trade him away. But how do you see that situation playing out with a truncated preseason for a rookie?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be more challenging than Rex suggests. I think it's going to be tough for anybody, even guys who are not rookies, to not have that offseason. We're all kind of creatures of habit in football, and I understand they're going to go out there and play. They've been playing their whole lives, so they know how to play football, but it's going to be a little different for guys who are going from college. We all know how different the speed of the game is, and it's different from practice to the game. So if you don't even get a chance or get much of a chance to practice and do these offseason drills, learn a new terminology, learn the way the nonverbal communication that you need, particularly as a quarterback to receiver when you're on field making audibles and changing plays, like that's a lot of stuff to catch up on. So I'm not so sure. I think that a guy like Joe Burrow is talented enough, but there might be a a little bit of a hiccup in his in him getting started, and having a guy like Andy Dalton there to maybe start the first couple of weeks might be nice to give Joe Burrow some time to learn and grow.
Factor this in wherever you would like and however you would like. Joe Burrow is older than Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, or Lamar Jackson. That is what it is. Obviously, he hasn't played in the NFL.
I'm older than them too, Greeny, but I can't play quarterback, so I'm not sure that the age matters that much.
All right, let's talk about some other quarterbacks in this draft. Let's live in a world, as we have this conversation, where Tua is a question mark. A year ago at this time, the Dolphins were talking about tanking for Tua. Now they are probably 2 weeks away from drafting him. But given his injury history and the inability to travel, his projection becomes a whole lot less certain. So, Dan Graziano, I come back to you, our insider. Tua, question marks. Justin Herbert feels like a lot more of a sure thing, but maybe some people are questioning how high his ceiling is. In your view, is it a slam dunk that if they're both sitting there at five, Miami takes Tua and not Herbert?
No, Greeny, I don't think that's a slam dunk at all. I think it's entirely possible that in that situation, the Miami Dolphins would opt for Justin Herbert. And for the reasons that you indicate, that Tua Tagovailoa is someone who comes in with health questions, and not about, you know, will he be ready to start the season, but long-term durability. You heard Dolphins owner Stephen Ross even talk about this before the combine, talking about he's a great player, but obviously there are health concerns. Miami is going to have to make sure those concerns are allayed to enough of an extent to that they believe it's worth risking the number five overall pick, or possibly multiple picks if they have to move up to get him, on a player who might not be consistently available for them down the road. Having three first-round picks gives them a little bit of a cushion in terms of using that asset, but I think it's entirely possible that given the choice, they would go with the healthier option in Justin Herbert, because a lot of these teams really like to avoid and minimize risk with those very, very high picks.
Boy, that would be fascinating. So, Dan, thank you. Let me get Mel back in here. Mel, over the many years I've been watching you on this draft, I've heard you be very critical of a lot of picks, frequently with my team, the New York Jets, over the course of time. Mm-hmm. If the Dolphins were to take Justin Herbert at five with Tua Tagovailoa still on the board, in your view, would that be an outlandish decision to make?
No, it's easy for me to sit here and say I have Burrow, then Tua, then Herbert and Love. I'm not making that pick for my organization with that injury. And that injury is critical in two ways. He's had the injuries. You don't know where he is with that. You think he's coming back and everything's encouraging? Great. But once he's in the league, is he going to be durable or is he going to be fragile? And that's the thing you don't know till he's in the league, taking hits from NFL players, not college players, where he couldn't hold up. That's why this notion that Justin Herbert is no longer around or has never been around is ridiculous. Justin Herbert's always been around. He's gifted. This ceiling stuff is garbage. He's got the ceiling. What he has to do is, coming out of Oregon, adjust to the NFL. He showed that at Senior Bowl week in Mobile, showed it in the game when he was MVP. We know he's got the skill set. So Justin Herbert, whether you like him or you don't, is in that discussion. For Miami, what they have to figure out is, and they know it right now, is there a gap between Tua and Herbert? Are they equal? If they're equal, you probably go Herbert because of the injury of Tua. You don't move up to get Tua unless there's a big gap between Tua and Herbert. If you think it's Tua and nobody else after Burrow, you go up and get Tua. But if it's close or they're equal, obviously Herbert's heavily in that discussion.
All right, closer than I thought you were going to handicap it. Mel, thank you. Let me go back to Rex and Neek here. And Dominique, I'm going to start with you. What word jumps to your mind when you hear this conversation about the possibility of Herbert ahead of Tua?
Subterfuge. Like there's no way that this is at all realistic. I think that anyone who's watched these guys play, and there's no disrespect meant to Herbert, he is talented. He may grow into a Pro Bowler in this league, but anybody who has taken an honest, sober look at the film between those two guys, there is a huge gap in the talent there. And if you're afraid of the injury, like, this is football. It's a risky game. You have to take these risks, and drafting a quarterback with the way that the CBA is set up so that first round picks don't get paid as much is not nearly as risky as people think. I think it's a smart idea to go with Tua there. It is not smart to go with Herbert, which would be, in my mind, a drastic reach to get Herbert at five when you could get Tua at that same spot. And it's not without risk. If you pass up on Tua, something that we've talked about, Greeny, on this show before, that is also a risk. And I think that's a scarier risk. If you bring Tua in and he fails, that sets your franchise back for maybe 2 or 3 years. If he goes somewhere else and has success for a decade plus, and you have to watch some other team go to championships with the quarterback that you should have had, that's going to cost you your job too. So that's not without risk.
Let me go to Rex then on this, because Rex, you were the guy giving us Daniel Jones last year long before anyone thought it might happen, and I feel like you like Herbert. How about the notion of Herbert over Tua?
Yeah, it's just like last week I said that Herbert, I think, is going to be an outstanding prospect. It's certainly not a reach to go up, because if Herbert doesn't go at 5, he's going to go at 6. So to me, I don't think it's a huge risk. Now, I will say this. Tua, to me, that is Drew Brees. Unlike other guys that said Baker Mayfield is Drew Brees, no, he isn't. This guy actually is. He's accurate as heck like Drew Brees. He moves the pocket like Drew Brees. So to me, that's what you're passing on. Now, is there a risk involved? Oh my gosh, is there a risk involved? There's 5 surgeries that I've been told that he's had, so absolutely it's a risk if you take Tua. So I can understand if Herbert goes ahead of Tua. It's not because of the player, though. I can tell you that much, because I would take Tua.
The drama builds. We are 2 weeks and a day away from the draft. Guys, stay with me. We're just getting started. Tons to come here on Get Up this morning, including Oklahoma State's Mike Gundy. Very clear about when he wants to start practicing. His own school has other thoughts. You'll hear the big questions so many colleges are wrestling with. And Chase Young to Washington, the second pick in the draft. That's long been suspended. I think their coach may very well have confirmed it yesterday. You'll hear it next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Taco Bell. Delivery and drive-thru open. Yesterday on a teleconference, Oklahoma State's head football coach Mike Gundy spoke to reporters about the national and state response to the coronavirus pandemic and provided his timeline for when he and his team could return to the football facility.
With our staff, my goal is May 1st. I'm hoping that we have enough tests that are readily available. I'm reading every day where we're mass producing tests, and I'm thinking in 3 or 4 weeks we could have the test ready available for people that aren't sick. How fast that can happen based on the tests that are available, I can't say right now, but that's the plan, okay? We have to have a plan.
That's his plan. It may not be his school's plan. Oklahoma State University released a statement in response to that saying, "We will adhere to the advice of public health experts who are making informed decisions in the best interest of the citizens of our nation and state based on sound scientific data. We will also abide by the federal and state mandates as well as Big 12 guidelines." So we seem to have a disagreement as we continue to look. "We will not compromise the health and well-being of our campus community. This virus is deadly, and we will do our part at Oklahoma State to help blunt the spread." So as I bring Laura Rutledge into the conversation here, good morning, Laura. We have a disagreement now between the coach and his school, which just, I think, in some ways illustrates just how much confusion exists out there. And so we were talking yesterday, and you have, I know, talked to a lot of people, conference commissioners, coaches, all of them thinking about timelines for return. Take us through some of what you're hearing.
Well, yeah, Greeny, I think, first of all, the most important piece in all of this is that there is optimism around it. It's definitely complicated, but there's optimism because they have time. And really, the timeline that we're looking at here is toward the end of May, early June. All of these conferences that have shut down operations right now are going to reconvene, and they're going to assess the situation around the country, just like all of us are doing. They're going to see how things look at that point. So we're really talking about early June. That buys them a lot of time up until that point. Now, then once they have a timeline, a plan there, they're targeting mid-July for a hopeful return for their players and some semblance of athletic activity getting ready for the season. Look, who knows if this is possible, Greeny, but if they are able to get players back on campus by mid-July, a lot of these conference commissioners, a lot of coaches, they feel like that would allow for a start of the season at least relatively on time, maybe even on time. That's what the timeline really looks like for a lot of these schools around the country.
So that would be, we'd be looking at roughly 6 weeks there between when they would have the players back and when the first games would be played. Now that's a fascinating one. The other piece of this, and you and I talked about this yesterday, we didn't have time to get into it as much as I would have liked, is the idea of the players playing in stadiums without fans. We've heard that a lot on the pro level. On the college level, there seem to be a variety of different thoughts on this. I wanted to play Mack Brown, his thoughts on this, the coach at North Carolina, yesterday on the notion of college football being played without fans in the stands.
Paul, I don't think we can have football without fans. I mean, I can't even fathom it. So that's not even something that I think about or talk about. If it's not safe for fans, it's not safe for players. They're going to be right next to each other. I mean, they're going to be hitting each other in the mouth and breathing on each other for 3.5-4 hours.
That, I think, was fascinating. Yesterday, as you and I were talking, I got the sense that you were hearing from some people that perhaps they would sooner not play at all than play college football without fans in the stands. Is that an accurate read?
Absolutely. And I think you just heard it alluded to there by Mack Brown. The seeming split for me, Greeny, and the people that I've talked to is that the coaches and maybe even the players, they're the ones that really can't imagine games without fans. Nobody wants it. Obviously, we want the atmosphere around college football that's so special. You see it on your screen right now. Can you imagine watching a game without these incredible fans and environments? But here's the thing. The athletic directors, the conference commissioners, that world, they're saying, well, wait a second. If we could still play football, if we could have a season, however it may look, even if it doesn't include fans, but we still have a season, that may still be the best option. The good thing for them is that right now, they don't have to make these decisions. We are about 3 months, maybe even longer than that, away from really having to say hard and fast, this is what we're doing. It's a lot different from what we saw happening right around the NCAA tournament and conference tournaments in basketball. Remember, that was like one day they were playing and then the next they weren't. This buys a lot more time and a lot more knowledge is available for what these conferences can do at this point. But you're absolutely right that there are many that say, we'd rather not even play if it's playing without fans.
It's an important point you're making there, because the other thing that that happened with the NCAA tournament that looked terrible was that there wasn't one uniform decision, right? So one conference was playing, the other wasn't. One team actually played half a game and then stopped. Do you think there will be a uniformity in this somehow?
There should be, and there's a lot of communication about that. Look, these conferences are communicating throughout the day on conference calls and video chats. They're communicating with the NCAA. Those dialogues will continue to go on, and they'd love to see a uniform decision. But even right now, you're seeing some conferences, the Big 12, the SEC, the Pac-12, they've shut down until May 31st. The ACC is shut down indefinitely. So there's a little bit of difference already. These bodies can govern themselves. You know, one thing that I thought of, Greeny, let's say, God forbid, and this is all hypothetical, but we're at a point where it's regional and some of these regions are in a better position to play. Could we even see some conferences just decide to play themselves and have their own season? That could potentially happen because they are in control of what that looks like. None of that's being talked about right now as an actual reality, but it is out there as a possibility if they can't come to some sort of uniform agreement.
All right, we'll figure this out as we go. Outstanding work. That's Laura Rutledge with us here. We'll take a short break. Major League Baseball looking into playing in Arizona in May. Mark Teixeira likes the idea on one condition. You'll hear what that condition is next.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Today in history, April 8th, 1974, Hank Aaron surpassed Babe Ruth for the all-time home run record. Here's the call from Milo Hamilton.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
One of the legendary moments in the history of that or any sport. Let's talk about that sport. After reports that Major League Baseball was working to return as early as May with all 30 teams in the greater Phoenix area, Major League Baseball then released a statement yesterday saying they're not ready to endorse any particular plan. Meanwhile, reaction poured in from current and former players to this Arizona proposal.
I think it's going to be tough. I don't know if I could look at my kids just through a screen for 4 or 5 months. And same thing goes with my wife, you know, just not being able to be around. That's a long time. I think there's a lot of figuring out to do. I think there's a right way to do this, and I'm confident that Major League Baseball, the Players Association, all the owners, all the teams, players, I think that we're going to be able to find a way to come together and iron this stuff out.
When the news broke and I found out about it, my first reaction was, this is great. They're really working hard to try to bring baseball back. And I was happy about that. Now, if you look at the logistics and trying to figure out all the hurdles and the challenges that they're going to have to go through to make it happen, you know, you can start to pick apart those things and start to figure. But I was left with, hey, isn't this wonderful that we're trying to bring it back? Because I personally believe that baseball is magical. I was witnessing the role that baseball played after 9/11. And I think baseball does have that ability to repair and to help and heal. And I think there's a role here to play when we come out of this situation we're in now.
Some other favorable reaction from Rockies third baseman Nolan Arenado. He told the Denver Post, quote, "If it's safe, I'm in. I believe these ideas wouldn't be thrown around if it wasn't approved or can't be approved. I want to get back out there and play." Yankee reliever Adam Ottavino had a different or similar sentiment, I should say, with the New York Post. "I don't have any good insight, but I would be in the camp of supporting the idea. I'm sure a lot would have to go right for it to actually happen, but I'm hoping it can work because I want to play." So that's some favorable reaction. Let's bring in our guy. This is Mark Teixeira. Tex, there's some of that supportive reaction when you read through Jeff Passan's report and the notion of this possibility, this bubble city situation in Arizona. What was your first thought?
Well, let me be clear, Greeny. Players want to play. They absolutely want to get out there as soon as possible. They're going to be supportive of anything that gets them on the field and gets those checks starting to get written from the owners. That being said, this current plan is completely unrealistic. If you actually look at the logistics, like Cal Ripken said, like Chris Sale said, there is no way that you're going to be able to bring guys to Arizona that early, first of all, May, mobilize them for a couple weeks and start playing games. The logistics of this, trying to keep four guys or guys there for 4 months in Arizona, just can't happen this way.
Why?
Well, first of all, players are used to being their, you know, weight room and their batting cages and all the extra work you could do. There's going to be no extra work. There's going to be very little.
Now, this is a shame. We're losing his signal here. And this is such an interesting part of this conversation because I have notes from Tex. I sort of know where he's going ahead with all of this. And we will try and work on his signal and get him back again, because I think that it's very worth hearing his thoughts, his concerns. Look, I think any of us will agree, those of us who want to see sports come back as soon as it is safe and healthy for that to take place, that the mere fact that they are coming up with creative ideas in and of itself is a good idea. We'll see if they're able to figure out a way to make it happen. All right, in the meantime, as we go back to Tex a little later, let's get to some football. Washington is sitting at number 2. A lot of decisions for the Skins as it relates to that selection in the draft. They could take a quarterback. They would be doing so 1 year after they took Dwayne Haskins. They could draft a position player, probably Chase Young, or they could trade down. Ron Rivera talked about it very openly yesterday.
If you're going to make a trade and you're going to go back, that guy you're going to take at that spot has to be able to make the kind of impact you need to validate missing an opportunity to take a player that's a high-impact guy. If player A is going to play for you for 10 years, player D may not, then did you really get value or just get a whole bunch of picks? So you've got to be able to sit there and say that the next guy that I'm going to take is going to be that high impact guy.
Now, look, you probably have learned the lesson not to just believe everything everyone says around the time of the draft. But it feels like he's essentially saying, we're going to take Chase Young, and that's all there is to it. I've got D. Wood, who joins the group as well here. But, Rex, I'm going to start with you as my defensive guy. Is taking Chase Young with the second pick in the draft the right thing for Ron Rivera to do?
Absolutely is. There's no question about it. Look, they've already got two young quarterbacks on their roster. So the thought of Tua, there's no chance this team does that. So to me, it's a slam dunk here. We've seen the impact that pass rushers can come in the league and have. We saw it last year with Bosa. We've seen it with Von Miller. That's another way to win. So you get a player like this, he comes around once every 10 years and I understand Bosa was there last year, but this doesn't happen. So this is a rare guy. You know, is he? He's at least Khalil Mack. So to me, the impact he's going to make, you're talking about a perennial Pro Bowl player and a guy that's going to have a major impact on that Washington Redskins team. So without question, that's the only selection for them.
That's interesting. Let me push back a little bit on you, Rex, because I mean, I've watched your defenses all of my life and very closely, obviously, when you were the coach of the Jets. And it didn't feel to me like you always built everything around one spectacular pass rusher. Would you rather have the one great pass rusher or two or three really good players on your defense you might be able to get if you traded back?
No, I mean, you have the one elite pass rusher. If I had a pass rusher like this kid, it would have been a joke. I would have had all those trophies right there, would have said my name on them, not just my family's. So to me, and that's a fact. So look, we had to get real creative on defense because we never had a guy like this. These guys are so rare. They come around, very rarely. So you've got to, this is great. Like Ron Rivera, you can't land a better player for him. You already got the young quarterback on your roster. You bring in another kid that's a young guy that you had before. So to me, this is a slam dunk, no-brainer for the Redskins. And now you got to watch it because, man, they got depth in that D-line. They're going to be able to rush the passer in the fourth quarter with all that kind of depth. So to me, I think it's it'd be a great pick for them.
Let me go to the guy who would have to block him, and that's my buddy D. Wood. Damian Woody, the idea of this player, when you could trade out of that spot and maybe try and add several impact players, but maybe not one as spectacular as he is. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, Green, a lot of people always assume that you can just trade down, but it's very hard to trade down out of those top spots like that. And when you got a guy like Chase Young, listen, the things that he did at Ohio State was just tremendous. He has the perfect blend of size, speed, hands, all those bend, all those things that the elite pass rushers have. And Rex is right. When you have an opportunity to draft a game changer like this guy and add him along the line of, I think the Redskins have like three other first round picks along that line. They have depth, and those guys affect the game similar to like the way the San Francisco 49ers defensive line did last year. So if I'm Ron Rivera, I'm walking the card up there now, even though the draft's not until 2 weeks.
Nick, let me ask you this. You have the opportunity to take a young quarterback. Young quarterbacks on their rookie deals tend to have a lot of success in the NFL. You'd be turning your back on that. What would be your thought?
Yeah, I don't think that's the only way to build a championship team. I think that the seed that can build a championship team can be a great game-changing defensive, a potential Hall of Famer. And I think Rex brought up Von Miller. He's the perfect example because before Von Miller came there, the Broncos were not doing very well. He gets there. All of a sudden, they go to the playoffs five straight years, the Super Bowl twice, and he's the MVP of the Super Bowl. And it's not just because Von was great. It's because, again, you get him on that rookie deal. They had money to pick up DeMarcus Ware. They had money to get Aqib Talib. They had money to go after Peyton Manning, all because they were getting Hall of Fame level production from a very important position. So I know we get all excited when a team gets a young quarterback and we say, oh, their championship window is here and it's here now. If you can get a guy who has Hall of Fame potential and who is a perennial Pro Bowler on defense at an impact position like pass rusher, I think you can do the same things that you would do at a quarterback spot. You can build a team around that, and that one person can be the kernel that you build a strong championship runoff of.
I want to make it clear what I'm referring to here. I'm not suggesting that Washington would take Tua. I'm suggesting if someone wanted to give them, to use an overused expression, a king's ransom because that team wanted to go up and assure themselves of getting Tua, and you trade out of that spot if you're Washington, you lose the opportunity perhaps to get Chase Young, but maybe get a bunch of other defensive players. I guess what I'm asking you, Rex Ryan, is would you rather have one great player on your defense or three really good ones?
I'd rather have a great one. You can always find good players. And so to me, it's you don't have great players. Look, I've done it. We saw what we did when we had Darrell Revis, one great player. All right, a lot of good players, but one great one. And if you get a guy like that, oh, my God, it tilts the field. And so to me, there's no way. You don't even entertain the fact. Look, you can get three first-round picks, two first-round picks. They can end up being really good players, but they're not great players. You win with the superstar player, and I think this young man has that ability.
All right, so there's Rex Ryan there. I can't. I have no takers. It does sound like certainly my entire group has Chase Young going two to Washington, and the reality is that seems like the overwhelmingly likely scenario. Meanwhile, for the 41st straight year, the NFL draft is on ESPN. You'll see it here. You'll see it on the NFL Network. You'll see the College Game Day crew on ABC again this year, covering it all from the college perspective. It's going to be great, and it starts 2 weeks from tomorrow, Thursday, April 23rd. Through the 25th, with all 3 days also on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and on the ESPN app. As we continue with the second pick, the Redskins have interesting decisions to make. We'll talk about what they may do. We'll talk about Tom Brady on Howard Stern and more as we continue. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and as we speak, Tom Brady is appearing on the Howard Stern radio show. We are monitoring that, and if he says anything of interest, particularly, as Howard has promised, anything about Bill Belichick, we will definitely bring it to you here and let you hear what it is Brady has to say. Meanwhile, as we consider this from a football perspective, if Tom Brady is going to be a division champion for what would be the 18th time in his career, he is unquestionably going to have to earn it in the jam-packed NFC South. Brady isn't even the most prolific passer in his own division. He's second all-time in yards and touchdowns. Drew Brees is number one. And when the two of them meet, they'll be the first pair of 40-year-old starting quarterbacks ever to go head-to-head. But you already knew that. What you need to know is that the NFC South is the most decorated division in the sport, and it isn't even close.
You expect that one of these teams have an opportunity to make a run to the Super Bowl. This is going to be fun. This is going to be exciting.
It features last year's Offensive Player of the Year, Michael Thomas, and the man he barely edged out, Christian McCaffrey, who had the third most yards from scrimmage ever. Plus, the top three receivers in yardage last year, Thomas, Julio Jones, and Chris Godwin. Jones is actually the league's all-time leader in receiving yards per game, catching passes from the 2016 MVP Matt Ryan, and now joined by the 2017 Offensive Player of the Year and the league's leader in touchdowns the last three seasons, Todd Gurley. All of that, and we didn't even yet mention Mike Evans, Alvin Kamara, or a single defensive player like last year's sack champion Shaq Barrett, or Cam Jordan, one of only two players with at least 12 sacks each of the last 3 years. But the glamour always goes to the quarterbacks, and this group is loaded. If Brady, Brees, Ryan, and Teddy Bridgewater start week one, Elias tells us they would have the most combined wins of any division since they went to four teams in 2002 by a mile. Their total would be 513. The record now is 347. So, Tampa Tom, good luck, because looking at that gauntlet on your schedule, there's no doubt you're going to need it. It's the best division in the sport, and it goes way beyond the quarterbacks. Last season, 12 different players were selected to the NFL first or second All-Pro team from the NFC South, including at least two from every team. That is the most selections by any division last season. So let's talk about it here as we consider this division. And one of the things, and Rex, you know this well, that Tom Brady has done so successfully, one of the reasons that he made all these deep playoff runs is that he keeps winning his division in the AFC also all those years, getting the bye and moving forward. Are the Buccaneers the team to beat in your mind in the NFC South?
Well, I can tell you this, and D. Wood and I can speak about this. We saw it firsthand. Tom Brady, what he is, he's such a winner. And you're going to surround him with talent like Tampa has, Godwin, Mike Evans, those two tight ends. I mean, I can't wait to watch it. So to me, that's what he is. And the other thing is, the reason I like Tampa is you have Todd Bowles there as your defensive coordinator. I think he's the best coordinator in that division, and I think he's going to make the difference. Him and Brady. Brady knows how to win. He's not going to put his team in jeopardy like Jameis Winston did, like crazy. So to me, I think that they have a legitimate chance. As much as I love Sean Payton, I love Drew Brees. But man, oh man, I've been beat so many dang times by Tom Brady that I wouldn't bet against him.
You look at some of those numbers. That is a sneaky good defense led by Bowles, as you mentioned, and Barrett. And they played so many close games last year that turned on a play or two. And Winston, of course, threw the 30 interceptions. So, D. Wood, Tampa, New Orleans, which is the team to beat in the NFC South?
Well, Greeny, Rex makes a lot of really good points about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I'm going to get a slight answer to New Orleans Saints. So you talk about in a truncated offseason with everything going on with the pandemic. I think continuity matters. It's really going to matter this season. So the programs that's been consistent, been together for the longest period of time. And when you look at the NFC South, you have to get the edge to the New Orleans Saints. You got Sean Payton and Drew Brees, who's been together forever, running the same systems on both sides of the ball. A lot of the same personnel that's coming back. So I love the addition of Tom Brady with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Todd Bowles running that defense, but I'm going to get a slight edge because of continuity with the New Orleans Saints.
Well, you bring up an important point. So, Rex, we started the show talking about whether or not Joe Burrow, who will be a rookie, an experienced rookie, comparatively speaking, but a rookie, will be ready to start immediately based upon what figures to be a truncated offseason. In fact, it's already assured of being one. There certainly won't be OTAs. Tom Brady is the opposite of a rookie, but these are all new teammates. It is an all new scheme. It's all new coaches and everything else. Just how much of a factor do you think the offseason circumstances will be in his getting up and ready in Tampa?
Look, Tom Brady is going to run that offense. Let's make no mistake. Just like Peyton Manning ran that offense when he went to Denver, they're going to change to him. Any good coach would change to a quarterback like this. So that's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be more on the other guys getting up to speed with him. So to me, it's, you know, Brady's going to, he's not going to have any issue whatsoever getting his, you know, getting ready to play. And look, I get it. It's a different type of off season and things like that. But look, we did it in with the Jets. We had two rookies start at quarterback. So to me, it can be done. You're going to have teaching things anyway, albeit you're not going to be on the field around your teammates. That's why I think that impact that Brady would have had in that locker room is not going to be felt as much as it would have been had they been practicing. However, I think without question, he's going to be up to speed, and so will his teammates.
Maybe it's a team that figures to get better as the season goes on. Go ahead, D-Wood.
Yeah, let me piggyback something off of Rex, because I think he brought up a good point. And Greeny, you would actually know about this. Remember Brett Favre got traded in training camp back in 08. And we basically scrapped our whole office. We learned the West Coast. Brett was teaching us. It took us a couple games to get going. But boy, when we got rolling, we got rolling. And it was really the injury to Brett Favre that really derailed our season that year.
Don't get me started on that. That the season that Brett Favre had with the Jets is so underrated and underappreciated. People obviously remember him as a Packer, and rightfully so. And then the really good year he had in Minnesota the following year when he was an MVP candidate. That was a great Jets team that was rolling, D. Wood, until he got hurt, and then it all fell apart, and Chad winds up winning comeback player of the year and wins the division after being released after all of that. So, yes, you might say I remember it reasonably well. Having said all
Sorry,
of that.
Sorry, Greeny.
Meanwhile, on Planet, I want to show you guys something. Tell me what you think. And by you guys, I mean absolutely everyone. I am displaying for you the new Patriots jerseys, excuse me, Patriots. This is something I have to get used to saying. The new Buccaneers jerseys, you saw number 12 in there. That was Chris Godwin. He won't be wearing the number 12 this year. He'll be wearing number 14. Those are the new look jerseys for the Buccaneers, and they sent us some. So I've got the Brady one here in the red. Rex and D. Wood, what do you think of the new look for Tegad? D. Wood, you're sort of a fashionable fellow. What do you think of the new look in Tampa?
You know, I think they're cold, man. I would have loved to seen the creamsicles, but I thought the Bucs did really good with those jerseys.
How about you, Rex?
No, man, go back to the old ones. Get that puke orange or whatever you call that thing they used to have. I used to love those uniforms. Man, that's Tampa Bay. This thing, they look like Houston. Like, come on.
I agree. All uniforms were better in the 70s, but that's a different discussion. Coming up, Tony Ferguson headlines UFC 249. Where will he fight and when? We'll ask Dana White those questions when he joins us live in our next hour. Get Up on ESPN.